Okay, we're recording. Okay, we're in. So today we're on Daf Ayin Chet, 78A. I'll begin around six lines from the top near the two dots. Everybody with me? Nice to have you all with us today. So we said in the Mishnah that there's different shiurim, there are different amounts to invoke a hischaivus, to be chayiv for being mechal Shabbos on a deraisa level. In other words, to be chayiv skila b'mezid or karet or a korban chatat. So six lines from the top, it says, Mayim kidil shuf bahenin akidur. The Mishnah said, if a person on Shabbat carries out enough water to make an eye salve, then that person is chayev. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Michti, kumilta de shchicha below shchicha, azur banan batar de shchicha lakula. So, in other words, different items have different usages. So Abaye says, if something has a very commonplace usage, and a less commonplace usage, so we're going to go, following the commonplace usage, even if that results in a leniency. In other words, leniency would be a larger shear if it's a commonplace usage. He says, shchicha u'shchicha, let's say it has two commonplace usages, azur banan batar de shchicha l'chumran, then we'll take the one that's more stringent. Now, he gives examples. Yayin shtiyato shchicha, so when it comes to wine, the most common usage for wine is to drink the wine. That's the common usage for wine. Refuato lo shchicha. Using it for refua as an ingredient in an eye salve is not so common. He says, Azur rabbanan batar shtiyato de shchicha lekula. So Chamim followed the shear for drinking wine. And if you remember in our Mishnah, we said it was enough wine that the unadulterated wine that you would have enough to mix it with three parts water, and then it would give you a kos, shel bracha. So let's assume, let's say it's like, let's say it's one fluid ounce of wine. But if they would have gone with the refuah, it would have been less. For an eye salve, I need much less than a fluid ounce. So that's either going lakula, because that's the most common usage. Chalav, achilato shchicha, refuato shchicha. Chalav, milk. So it's interesting to hear the Gemara refers to achila by milk and shtiyah by wine, but it's saying when you consume milk, that's the most common usage for milk. Refuato lo shchicha. Again, it could be used in an eye salve as well, but that's not such a common usage for the milk. Azur rabbanan batar achilato lakula. So again, the Chamim followed the shear for drinking milk, and even though that's going to result in a kula, Did we mention a shear in the Mishnah for milk? Let me just go back again. I don't think chalav kidei gemia. We said milk, a gulp of milk is the shear. So a gulp of milk would be more than enough for the eye salve. Now, devash, when it comes to honey, achilato shchicha, consuming it is the most common usage for honey. A person's ingesting the honey. Refuato shchicha. Its refu is also shchiach. And again, in the Mishnah mentioned that honey was used, rashi tu pshatim. Either it's to put on like the blisters that a horse or a camel or a donkey has under the saddle, or it's just if a person has abrasions on the back of his hand on his foot, so they would apply the honey to it. But either way, the refua is also common. Azur banabata refua to the chumra. So the chachamim followed the refua, which is more stringent. And again, so the Mishnah said Dvash kitinatain ala katit. Honey, the shear is enough to apply to either the abrasion or the blister. That would be it. So now he's going to propound his question. This is Abaye. Elamayim michti shtiyato shchicha rufuato shchicha. So when it comes to water, the most common usage for water is people drink water. It's refuah, using it as ingredients in the eye salve is not so common. So he says, my tama azurbanam bata rufuato l'chumra. So why is the shear like for the refuah? In other words, it says enough water, if you carry enough water to add to an eye salve, then you're chayev for hotzah and Shabbos. Why did they go to that one? Why didn't they go, again, we said if one thing is more common, what's less common or not common, we're going to use the common thing and get that shear. Why are we going with the water for the less common? So Amar Abaye Bikli Lashanu. So Abaye says, our Mishnah was taught for the people in the Galil. The people in the Galil were not so wealthy, and they could not afford to put either wine or milk in their eye salve, and they would put water in the milk salve. So let's take a look at the Rashi. Now I'm attuned to you, Ruth. Let's see, we glee l'shana. It's a little lower than where we are, Ruth. It's around 20 lines up from the medium wide lines in Rashi, from the wide lines in Rashi. The Dibur Matchil is b'gli l'shanu. Ruth, do you see it? B'gli l'shanu. Oh, so he says, Shehin aniyim u'makpinu b'dvar mu'at. They're very poor. And v'chasen al yayin v'chalav l'shuf bo kilor. Vein shafin l'mayim. So as a result of that, they don't use wine or water in their eye salve. So that being the case, the water was used commonly for the eye salve and the galil, and therefore it's not shchiach and no shchiach, it's shchiach and shchiach. So we're going to go for the more chumru method. Back in the Gemara, Rava Amar afilu tema b'shar mekomot k'dishmuel. Rava says you could even explain our Mishnah is talking about other places across the board, and it's like Shmuel explains. And remember, Shmuel was a doctor, besides being a gadol ador. He says the Amar Shmuel kol shakiani masu metalei, that all like the like beverages you would add to the eye salve, they're therapeutic, but they cause some blockage in the vision afterwards. Labar mimaya de masu b'lo metalei, but water is curative and it doesn't block the vision. So it comes out then that water would commonly be used for the eye salve, according to the way that the Gemara is understanding, in every place. All right, let's just summarize and we'll take some questions, comments, and thoughts, okay? So the basic idea we're saying is that we have different shiurim for hotza'a depending on the item. In other words, different items have different shiurim, different amounts, and it has to be a davar chashuv. But let's say something is used for purpose A, B, C, D, or E, or F. So the Gemara says we're going to use the most shchiach one. We're going to use the most common usage of the item, even if that results in a leniency in halacha. We're going to use the most common one. So we gave some examples where we use the most common one, like wine. Wine is, you know, typically drunk, and then it's also sometimes used as an eye salve. But drinking is much more common with the wine. So as a result of that, we're using the shear for drinking, even though that results in a leniency, that the amount of wine has to be, remember, it's like one quarter of a cup of wine, basically, is the amount of wine. So the Gemara says, how come when it comes to water, water is most commonly you drink it. Eye salve, the Gemara assumes we don't commonly put it in an eye salve, and yet we're using the shear for the amount of water to take and put into an eye salve. That's the shear for hotzah. So the Gemara ends up giving two answers. The answers are basically that it is common to put it in the eye salve. Either the Mishnah is talking about in the Galil. The Galil people were dirt poor, so they couldn't afford to put wine or milk into their eye salve, so they would put water in the eye salve. So it was a common usage, and then we're going to the Chumrah that way. Or it's for every place, and again, our supposition is wrong. It's not so uncommon, because the other additives will end up blocking your vision. Water won't block your vision, so it is a common usage. So that being it, we have a common usage and a common usage. We're going to go with the more stringent one. Okay, who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we said? Everybody good? Okay, I love it. All right. Livia, we'd love to see you, Livia. I don't like this blank portrait. All right? All right.
I come down with a cold, so I'm...
All right. All right. All right, whatever you got going, Livia. Okay.
Rabbi, so Abai asked a question, and he answered it himself, too? The first answer?
Yeah, so I don't know. Let me see. Sometimes it's not so clear in the Gemara who's doing the answering. Let's see. One minute.
It says, I'm Abai.
Yeah. Oh, right. Let me take a look. Yeah. So with the right. So that right. That's Abai's answer. Right.
So he asked the question, he answered himself.
Right. That's correct. Okay.
I have a question. To the extent that the Gemara sometimes serves as a lens to a local situation and problems, the fact that the eye salves that I mentioned so many times here, does that in some way imply that was an ongoing problem?
I think they did have a lot of problems with the. With because it's in the Gemara, it comes up a lot, like with different things with the eyes. I think they did have a problem with that. All right, let's see further in the Gemara. Now, the Gemara says we're around midway down the column on Ayin Chet Amud Aleph, 78a, midway down. Okay, Ushar Kol Hamashkim B'Reviyat. We said all other beverages, the shear is a Reviyat. Reviyat means Reviyat Alog. And again, a Reviyat Alog is a Be'a Umechtza, 1.5 eggs, right? That's Reviyat Alog, is 1.5 eggs. So, so there's a question exactly how that translates into you know, fluid ounces, and you know, this is for a kid, it's shayach by kiddush, how much is revia. So we usually say if it's a drabanan, we could rely on 3.3 fluid ounces. If it's a din drabanan, if it's deraisa, we should be more machmir. According to Rav Moshe, I think the shear comes out to be 4.42 fluid ounces. And then other people are machmir even more, and they say, like, I think, like 5.07 fluid ounces. And it's very shayach for the size of the Kiddush cup on Friday night. You want to have a shear deraisa. In other words, a shear, because the mitzvah of Kiddush on Friday night is a mitzvah min haTorah. And then if you're making Kiddush during the day, you could rely on the more lenient opinions, okay? So, yeah, what's up, Fern? Fern, you have a question? Go.
So when you talk about a shear for Kiddush being the same as a shear for Hotzah, so it's a leniency in one place and it's a chumrah in the other place.
No. Okay, listen. In other words, again, you're mixing kasha with one, but the idea is the gross size of the cup has to be revius. If you're talking about in the Mishnah, we said that the amount of wine meant like undiluted wine. Bizman Chazal, the wines were very strong, and they would dilute it with water. But after they diluted it with water, yeah, and they're right, then it's the same shear. Then it's revius. Then it is revius. There's no contradiction. In other words, everybody agrees kosher bracha has to be a revius of wine. But the Mishnah is talking about wine before it's diluted. In other words, when we drink the wine, I mean, we don't dilute the wine the same way they diluted the wine, but when we drink the wine, that's the finished product, and we need a revius for that. Is that clear or not? Yeah?
Not really, but
let me say again. Okay, again, a kosher bracha has to be revius, a quarter of a log. A kosher bracha. What?
Okay, go on. Before I ask.
In the Mishnah is talking about the amount of wine I have to carry out on Shabbos in order to be chayiv. So the Gemara says the amount of wine that would be a rova of a revius, a quarter of a revius, because the Mishnah is saying, I'll take that wine, then I'll add three parts water, and then I'll have a cup. But ultimately, the Mishnah is saying the cup needs to be a revius. Is that clear?
Right. So am I muted? No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
Okay. Let's say that this is 4 ounces a revius or something. So what? The only thing I'm saying is that if to make 4 ounces for Kiddush, you have to keep going till you get to 4 ounces. So maybe that's chumrah if you don't have a lot of money.
Yeah, in other words,
but
mean
it's
for
a kula because
for on Shabbos. Yeah. So I would obviously be machmir both ways. Every kula,
that's my question.
Every chumrah has a kula to it, and you've touched on it. So for Shabbos, even if you do less than the shear, it's still an Easter deraisa because you're not allowed to take out a chatzi shir min haTorah. But obviously, the thrust is you want to be machmir both ways, okay?
Okay.
You shouldn't carry any amount of wine out on Shabbos, but you get the idea. Okay, let's take a look.
I have a comment in regard to Ruth's. There's a note in the Stein Salts Gemara about this treatment of eyes. Says some commentators explain that wine drinking was so widespread in the Galil that people's eyes were red from excessive drinking, and they used significant amounts of water to remedy their eye ailments.
All right. Okay.
Little historical footnote there, Ruth.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Now I got to mute everybody again. Okay. Let's go back. Okay. Let's keep moving. All right. Now, so we're at the two dots on Ayin Chenuman Aleph 78A. Ushar Kulamashkim Revi'it. We said all other beverages, the shear for Hotzah is a Revi'it. And we discussed the Revi'it. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, Dam B'chol Minimashkim Revi'it. If a person carries blood out on Shabbos and all other types of beverages, it's a Revi'it. Rabbi Shim ben Elazar Omer, Dam k'dei l'chol ba'ayin achat. Shimon Lazar says, no, the blood, the shear for blood is not a revius. The shear for blood is enough to apply it to one eye. Shekin kochlin l'barkit. The Gemara says, and he says, that they would apply this blood to the eye for barkit. Barkit is some sort of protuberance in the eye. I'm not so clear exactly what it is, but it's, they said here, a speck protruding from the eye. Now, the Gemara interrupts the Braisa, stop the Braisa. The Gemara has a question. Umay ninhu, what type of blood are we talking about? Dama the Tarnagola Bra. It's the type of the wild hen. The wild hen's blood, that's the cure for the thing with the eye, and that's what we're talking about. Now back to the Brisa. Shmuel says blood enough to apply to one eye, because we would apply the blood for the Yarud, and the Yarud, they said, is a cataract. And then the Gemara interrupts, Umainihu Dama Dekarushtina. It's the mole's blood. So in other words, they're talking about a different type of blood. So the Tanakhama says the shear for blood is always revius. And Rav Shimon ben Elazar says that blood he's talking about, but he's talking about like this chicken blood is the is your chayiv if you take out enough to apply to one eye. And then Rav Shlulil says blood is also if it's for one eye, and that's if you take out the blood from the mole. V'simaneich, and this is the Gemara is still speaking. V'simaneich gava l'gava. How do I remember which one is the mole and which one is the wild hen? So he says gava l'gava, that which is interior. The mole usually hangs out in the house. He says, and l'gava, that's for like the cataract. That's like it's still part of like in the body. It's lower. He says bra l'bra. The wild hen, which is outside the house, is for the protuberance from the eye. Okay, now back to the Braisa. And we don't understand these words, and we must be patient. That's only if I'm doing hotza'ah of alba matznia kol shu chayev. If I'm matznia, if I store a small amount, then I'm chayev. Rabbi Shimon Omer, but remember Matznia, Shimon says, what are you talking about? The person who's Matznia, Babamotzi, Eno Chayav El Abrevid. We'll see in a minute what those lines mean. He says, Umeodim Chachamim Rabbi Shimon, Babotzi Shofchim, Rashid Rabim, Shiran Brevid. The Chachamim, the Chachamim, and here the Chachamim are going to be Rabbi Shimon Elazar, agree to Rabbi Shimon, when you take out wastewater, the shears are Revid. All right, so the Gemara is going to ask what the Braisa means, and we'll take it up from here. So Amamar, but Ben Morim B'motzi. So the quote from the Braisa is, when we're talking about your motzi, you're doing hotza'ah of Abamatznia, if I store it, he says, kol shehu. So then it's any amount. In other words, if I store a lesser amount, then I'm chayav for the lesser amount. So the Gemara says, Atu Matznia love motzi. Who? What are you talking about? If I'm Matznia, are you talking about being motzi? What is this like? Matznia, motzi, whatever. What is the pshat in the Braisa? Here the Braisa says in one thing if I'm motzi, but the Matznia, we're also talking about a person who's motzi. So Amar Abaye, Hachmayaskinan. So Abaye says, what is the Braisa talking about? B'talmid shamar lo rabo lehu p'nei liyamakom l'suda. With a Talmud whose master, and here Rashi says, it's talking about not a Rebbe and a Talmud for yeshiva, but a Rebbe and a Talmud for a trade or profession, like a shoemaker. So the master says to the apprentice, I want you to clear out this place for a meal that I want to have. Halach upanalo davar chashuv lakol chiyavi ilave. If then he cleared out and he carried on Shabbos something that everybody would be considered to be chashuv, he's chayev. Davar she'enu chashuv lakol, if it's something that's not so chashuv, and it was you, I, we wouldn't think it's so chashuv. If the master nevertheless put it away, and the master was machshiv that amount, then the Talmud carried it out, so he's chayiv. Let me say this outside the Gemara, then we'll do it. Well, I'll say it in. If you remember, we had a three-way machloket by Hotza'ah, and the most stringent opinion was the Tana, Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Rav Shimon ben Elazar said that if a person is matznia, a small amount, he could be chayiv for that small amount. But even if I carry, in other words, let's say Fern is machshiv small amounts of some object, and I carry out that object that Fern was machshiv, I'm chayiv on Shabbos. That's Rav Shimon Elazar. So that's what the Brice is saying. Let's read the lines in the Brice again. We'll go up five lines, six lines above where it gets wide in the Gemara. In other words, if I'm motzi, I'm stam, a motzi person, I'm carrying something, and I don't have any specific machshava, so the shear would either be revius, or it would be enough to apply in one eye. Aval b'matznia kol shu chayev. But if I'm matznia, if I stored it away, a lesser amount than stated forth in the Braisa, then I'm chayev for hotza'ah, and this reflects the opinion of the Tana Reb Shimon Elazar. It's not everyone's opinion. That's the Tana Reb Shimon Elazar. Okay, everybody have that or not? Robert, you good? Okay. All right, now let's see it further. Now let's do the next line in the Braisa that again Reb Shimon Omer. Now Reb Shimon was the most lenient opinion in the Mishnah. Remember Reb Shimon? We had Reb Shimon and I in Vavam Beis. He says Lo Amru Kol Shiurim Halalu Ela Masniyehen. Reb Shimon says that all the shiurim that are in the Mishnah for Hotza'ah are dafka for people who save those amounts. But really, the shiur is really always a revius. And remember, Reb Shimon also held if you're a wealthy person, you know, the sky's the limit on Hotza'ah. So Reb Shimon Omer, in other words, all the shiurim in the Mishnah, that's a person, he's matznia, he stores those amounts. If you're motzi, so then default is revius, according to Reb Shimon. All the things are revius. Okay, now, let's go back in the Gemara. The second wide line, on Ayin Vav, Ayin Ched Amud Aleph. Okay, Amar Modim Chachamim L'Reb Shimon, B'motzi Shokan L'Rashid Rabim Shiram B'Reviyat, that the Chachamim agree with the Tana Reb Shimon, that, in other words, even the most stringent opinion, which is Reb Shimon ben Lazar, and he says that you can have small, small, small shear, but he agrees when it comes to Shofchim, wastewater, that the shear is a revius. There he agrees that the shear is a revius. He says, Shofchim l'may chazu, what is wastewater? You know, what can I do with wastewater? So, Amar Reb Yirmiyah l'gabel banan atit, a person would use wastewater to knead clay with it, to knead clay, and then, you know, turn it into the clay can harden and he could use it. So he says Vahatania, but we learn in the Braisa tit kedei lasot behen pikur, that the shear for clay, for hotzah of clay, is to make a pikur, the mouth of a crucible. And Rashi says like the crucible is the pot where they're, you know, smelting, you know, silver and gold. And in the pot was a hole where they would stick a bellows to blow the fire. It's you know, picture's worth a thousand words. I don't have a picture, but that's the way. So in that hole, around the rim of that hole, they would put clay. They would put clay. So it's obviously a small amount of clay for hotza'ah. So the amount of water for that clay would be less, right? The amount of water should be a minuscule amount of water. So how can we say the shear is revius? When the amount of clay, you know, we said the water is to turn to knead the clay, but clay itself I see is like very de minimis. So the water should even be less. So lo kasha, there's no contradiction between that last brisa and the earlier brisa. Hadalo megabel. In other words, the last brisa is talking about where the clay has already been kneaded. So then the amount of clay is the amount to stick on the hole. He says, but when we're talking about the amount of water, we're talking about to turn something into clay. So pikur. Nobody is going to bother themselves to make clay just for pikur. Nobody does that small amount. Pikur is a small amount. If I'm going to knead the water into clay, I'm going to take a larger amount. And a larger amount would be a revius of water for the amount of larger amount of clay. But once I have clay, then the amount of clay that I would take out would be to be chay for hotzah, would be enough for the pikur, for the amount of the crucible. All right. Any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did?
Can you repeat the answer?
Yeah. All right. We said that everybody agrees that the amount of wastewater that I'm chay for hotzah is revied. You got that, Yosef?
Yes.
Okay. So why is it a revius? Because we said that's the amount of water you need to knead clay. That's the amount of water you need to knead clay. So the Gemara says a revius, but the amount of clay itself that you're chayav for hotza'ah is just the amount of clay to put around the small hole. So the amount of water can't be a revius. It's got to be like, you know, 0.0, you know, 0.5 fluid ounce, 0.10 fluid ounces. So the Gemara says no. To make clay, I'm not going to make clay for a little hole. In other words, but to make clay, I'm going to make a big amount of clay, and then I need a revius. But once I have clay, the amount of clay would be enough for that little hole. Is that okay or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody good? All right. I'm going to move on. All right. Now we're up to the next Mishnah. All right. Now the Mishnah is continuing on with different shiurim for different items to be chayiv in hotza'ah. Again, we're three lines from the bottom, and ayin ched amud aleph, 78a, three lines from the bottom. Manitin hamotzi chevel kedei lasot ozen lekupa. If a person carries out rope on Shabbos, what's the minimum amount of shear for rope? So it says enough rope to make a handle for a basket. In other words, if I take out that amount of rope, I don't know if it's a foot, whatever, so that would be the amount of rope to be chayiv. Gemi, k'dilasot t'loi l'nafa l'kvara. Gemi is like a type of reed, grass reed, enough to make a handle for a nafa or a kvara. Nafa is a fine sieve, a kvara is a coarse sieve. Rabbi Yehuda omer, k'dili tolmi menu midat minal l'katan. Rabbi Yehuda says no, he disagrees with the Tanakama, and he says the amount of gemi is not enough to make a handle. The amount of gemi is to measure the length of a child's foot. In other words, so a person wants to make shoes for his child, so they don't have like the measuring instruments we have today. They would take some gemi and have the child step on it, and then he would mark it and bring that gemi to the shoemaker and say, I need a shoe, like it's like children's shoes. So it's a smaller amount of gemi. And according to the Meiri, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees about the chevel as well. He holds the chevel also would be that amount. Niyar, k'dilchtobalav kesher mosin. Paper would be the shear to write a tax collector's receipt on it. And here it's talking about like you pay the toll, like you went over a bridge and they would give you a receipt. So if I carry out blank paper, it's enough to write the tax collector's receipt. And the tax collector's receipt would be two letters. Okay, so that's a small piece of paper. V'motzi kesher mosin chayev. A person carries out a tax collector's receipt, he's chayev. So the question is, that seems so obvious, right? In other words, if you tell me that the shear for paper is enough to write the tax collector's receipt, and you tell me it takes out the collector's receipt, I'm chayev, that seems like superfluous. So turn to Amud Beis, there's a Tosfos there. Turn to Ayin Chen, Amud Beis, 78b, the third Tosfos. V'motzi kesher mosin chayev, itzrich lashmuinan afilu ketav alaklaf. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that even if a person or the tax collector wrote his receipt on klaf is parchment, it was made from the hide of an animal, instead of using paper, he says, the shear for klaf to be chayev is the amount of klaf necessary to write one parsha, the parsha of Shema Yisrael in tefillin. But if a tax collector had written his receipt on the klaf, even though it normally has a larger shear, so then you're chayev with the smaller shear. All right, let's turn the page. All right, now the top line on Amud Beis, Niyar Machuk, which is like erased paper. So erased paper, I can't write on erased paper. Do you remember, who remembers in Pirkei Avot where Niyar Machuk comes up? Does anybody remember where in Pirkei Avot Niyar Machuk comes up? Nobody?
Yes, it's to say that it's better to learn Torah when we are young.
Absolutely. You're 100% correct, Livia. It says, Halomed Yelad Lamahu Domeh, something like Dio Shnichtaval on the Archadash, like ink that's written on a new paper when you learn when you're younger. Halomed Zakein Lamahu Domeh, when you learn when you're older, what is it like? Like Dio that's written on the Yarmachuk. It means, like, you get all these other things, like, formished in your mind, and then you're writing on it, it's not as clear. In other words, learning is good at any point in time. But it's always better to get the learning in when you're younger, and then it's writing on like on a tabula rasa, like on a fresh piece of paper. Okay, now, so again, so the top line, Yarmachuk lechrochala al slochi ktana shel plaiton. So erase paper, enough paper to wrap around the top of a bottle. The plaiton is like a perfume. He says balsam oil, or kedilasot kamea. Hide enough to make a kameya. Kameya we know is an amulet, and the simple shot is enough to be the pouch for the amulet. That would be enough to be mechayev of me. Now, in parentheses, we have duchsusas kidei lechtob mezuzah. Duchsusas is a part of the hide, but we normally don't write the mezuzah on duchsusas, and the marshal takes those words out. Klaf kidei lechtob alav parsha ketana shebetfilin shishma Yisrael. If a person takes out klaf, which is the parchment, and again, the parchment is the outer layer of the hide. The parchment is the outer layer of the hide. So if it is enough to write the smallest parsha in tefillin, there are four parshiot in tefillin. So the smallest parsha is Shema Yisrael, right? So if you have enough klaf to write that, then you're chayev. Dio, kidachtov shteyotiyot. Ink, if you took out enough ink to write two letters, you're chayev for that. Kachol is the eye paint. Enough to put in one eye, and the Gemara will ask, I think we'll do this on Monday's daf, like, why would a woman put eye paint in one eye? It's like mascara, but we'll see. He says, Devek, kidilitain barosh hashafshaf. Devek glue enough to put barosh hashafshaf, the head of a board, but it, we'll see. It's a type of, like, it's going to be like a bird trap. We'll see in a minute. Zephet begafrit, pitch and sulfur, kidilasot nekev, kidilika nekev. So let's look at the Rashi on this. The six narrow line from the top, Ruth. You have it? You have it, Ruth? Kedei lasot nekev katan in the Rashi? Point out your finger. Give me a thumbs up if you got it. Put out your hand with a thumbs up. Good work. Okay. So kedei lasot nekev katan. Kli shenonim bo kesef chai. Kesef chai is mercury. You know, mercury, we're used to mercury like being red. But I think you may remember from chemistry, it's really silver, right? I remember about mercury, like the meniscus, like water, it, like, you know, forms like a valley. And the mercury, it forms like a hill. In other words, like the edges, like, cling down. That's what I remember. Anyway, so he says, so they call it like living silver. In other words, like, silver is normally hard in its natural state. Mercury is liquid, so it's kesef chai. So klishon nebo kesef chai. So timpiv bezefet o begafrit. So a person seals off the opening with pitch or sulfur, and he makes a small hole to take the mercury out with. When he seals that hole, with that, that's the shear for the zefet or the gafrit. That's a very small shear, a very small shear. All right. He says, back in the Mishnah, shava kidilitain al pi nekev katan. Wax enough to put in a small hole. Charsit is crushed brick, kidila sot pi kur shel tsurfei zahav. Enough to make in the opening of that hole in the crucible. So I assume it means enough crushed brick, like for the clay that would, you know, line that hole in the crucible that we discussed earlier. Rabbi Yehuda omer, kidila sot pit put. Yehuda says that the charsit is enough, pitput is a tripod, but it means to repair the tripod with a very small amount. Subin, which is bran, kidelitain al pikur shel tsurfei zahav. So al pikur, which would mean, again, the opening, but it somehow it means that he's using this bran as fuel, and it sounds like enough bran that would fit in that hole, that would be enough, and that would be fuel for the fire for the gold smelter. Or else, in the art, so he quotes from the Rambam and his Pirush Mishnayot that the bran was placed there while the metal's being heated so the heat would be retained. In other words, like, he's got some hole in there. I don't know if the bellows are being stored there or whatever, and then maybe he takes the bellows out and then he wants it sealed up when he's cooking, and then cooking it. So the Rambam says he would fill it with bran. Seed, which is lime, kidila sud kitana shibabanot. It's enough to smear upon the little of girls, it means her little finger. He says, Rabbi Yehuda omer kidila sud kilkul, enough to make a kilkul, which is a, like, cause the temples, the hair on the temples to lie flat. Rabbi Nechemi omer kidila sud undapi, it's enough to smear on the forehead, and like it turns red, and she's looking good. Okay, who's got any questions that we did in the Mishnah? Anybody have any questions, comments, or thoughts on the Mishnah? All right, I'm moving on. All right. So the first line in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Chebel namil chayiv kidilaso tolai lanafu lukvara. So why is it in the Mishnah said the shear for a rope is enough to make a handle for a basket? And then the shear for a gemi was a smaller shear, and that's enough to be a handle for a type of sieve. So why can't it be rope enough for a sieve, be a handle on a sieve, and then it'll be a smaller shear? So he says, "Kema decharik b'mano lo avdi inchi." In other words, the sieve was apparently wood, at least the frame was wood, and the rope would abrade the keli, so they wouldn't use rope for that. So that's not going to go with that shear. Tan Rabbanan, we learned the brisa, hutzin kidilasar ozen l'sal kfifa mitzrit. Hutzin or palm fronds. He says it's enough to make like a handle for a kfifa mitzrit. And a kfifa mitzrit, here they said it's a basket made of palm bark, or he quotes the Rashbam, Baba Batra, says it's a basket made of willow reeds. But either way, the hutzin is enough to make the handle for that basket. Sieve, which is like the bast on a date palm tree. So here the article said it means like the vines that go around, that wrap themselves around the date palm tree. Acherim omrim, others say, and usually Acherim, the Gemara in Horia says, that's the Tana Reb Meir. He says, Kidei litein al pi mashpei chatan sanein et ayayin, enough to put on the opening of a funnel in order to filter out the wine. In other words, like the vines would be a type of filter and hold back some of the impurities. Revav is a grease stain, grease. Kidei lasuch tachat ispagin kitana, enough to put underneath. Ispagin kitana is like a small wafer. How is he translated here? Yeah, a small wafer. In other words, they want to attach the wafer to the side of the oven to cook it. So they would, smear grease on the bottom of the wafer. So that's the minimum shear for the grease, because that's the minimum thing that you could do with it. He says, v'kama shiura, what is that shear? Kisela, like the size of a cella. So it means, like, if the area that it should cover would be the cella, is the type of coin. V'hatania kigrogeret, but in the Braisa we learned the shear is the size of a grogeret, a dried fig. Now, dried fig is more a measure of volume, but it means if the cookie, the wafer, is total volume is the size of a grogeret, so let's see, so the Gemara says, so the amount of grease that would require, the same shear. In other words, if the cookie is the size of a dried fig, it needs a cella's worth of grease to go to the bottom, so it's the same thing. Mochin is cotton, kidei lasot kadur ketano, enough to make a small ball, become a shiro ke'egos. What's the shear? The size of a nut, which is usually a walnut. Okay, who's got any questions on what we did in the Gemara? Everybody good? All right, we're moving on. Okay,
so on that last one, when it says enough to make a small ball the size of a nut, why doesn't it just say the size of a nut?
Yeah, I think it's because it's trying to give you like the reason why that's the shear. In other words, each thing is that's a davar chashuv. So apparently, a small ball of cotton is like chashivas in that form in some way. Maybe the small ball, maybe I don't know where I would stick it, but that's the only thing I could think of. In other words, like we had this in the Mishnah earlier. Remember we said by the animal food, we said. Like if you gave food the size of the young goat, so why to say young goat? It was the shear of a grogeret. So it says the teacher that's why it has that shear. That's the only thing I could think of.
Rabbi Eric, is it possible that they used the cotton to strain impurity from the wine?
Wait, the cotton to strain impurities? I don't know.
Cotton as a strainer. This training method.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, let's see further. Now, Niar Kedei Lasot Kesher Mochsin. So the paper enough to write the tax collector's receipt on. So it means like people would travel, they're traveling on the river, they're crossing the river, so there was a tax. So they pay the tax and they get a receipt so that later on there's not a claim they didn't pay the tax, the toll. So Tana taught in a brisa, kama kesher mochsin shtei otiot. So how much is the kesher mochsin? Now on the side he has, let's look on the side. You see in the column in Masoras Hashas Ruth, the far left hand column, it's interior to Rashi, and there's brackets there. The brackets mean it's from Rabbi Shaya Pick Berlin. So he quotes from the Aruch Erech shtei. Tana kama kesher mosin shtei otiot bichtav yivani. So the Aruch, his girsa is where that you have to be two letters in the Greek alphabet, and then he adds on shem gedolot miotiot shelana, which are larger than the Greek than the Hebrew writing. So let's go back in the Gemara. So Tana kama kesher mosin shtei otiot, two letters which would be like, and if you use the girsa in the Aruch, that would be like Greek letters, which are like two Greek letters. He says, Uraminu, on this we pose a contradiction from the Braisa. The Braisa says, Hamotzi niyar chalak, if a person takes out blank paper on Shabbat, im yeshbo kidlethof shtei otiot chayav im la patur, if there's enough to write two letters, he's chayav. So here, in other words, the one we're saying two Greek letters, and the one we're saying just two letters, and two letters would mean like small letters, like the Hebrew letters. So the Gemara says, Amrav Sheshet, my shtei otiot shel kesher mosin. So Sheshet said that's what the Braisa means. When the Braisa says two letters, it means like the size of two Greek letters for the tax collector's receipt. Rava Amar Shtiotu Didan. So Rava says, no, the Braisa means two of our letters, two small letters, Ubeda Chiza, but also including like a blank area to hold on to the document. He says, Dahainu Kesher Mosin. In the end, it adds up to the same space as the Kesher Mosin. So the Braisa means, so again, so the Kesher Mosin is enough space to write these two big letters. And Rashi points out, with the Kesher Mosin, you don't need a place to hold it. I don't know if they were to hold it. I don't know if they were afraid, like they'll smudge the printing or something like that, because you would hold it like in the hand, just out there. That's the way Rashi says you hold the Kesher Mosin. But if it's the Bryce is saying it's the same, you know, square inches, you know, but it's two of our Hebrew letters, and then also a margin in which to hold the document. Okay, Meifei. So on Rava's Pshat, we're going to ask Akasha. We're quoting from a Braisa now. Meifei, Hamotzi Niyar Machuk, if a person is carrying out a blotted piece of paper. And now remember, the blotted piece of paper, we said in the Mishnah, I need enough to wrap around the bottle opening. He says, Ushtar Parua, or I carry out a paid up IOU note. Imyesh Beloven Shalo, Hiltov Shteotiot, if there's enough on the margin, in other words, the non blotted out area, to write two letters, or the whole document is large enough that I could use to wrap around the opening of a bottle, chayav im lav patur, otherwise I'm patur. So here, this braisa just says that the margin is enough to write two letters. This is Akasha against Rava. In other words, Rava says that when, let's go back, when Rava says, when the braisa says, kidei lechtov shtei otiot, the earlier braisa says kidei lechtov shtei otiot, just stop that language. That means two Hebrew letters at a margin. That's code. So when the braisa says kidei lechtov shtei otiot, it means two Hebrew letters and a blank margin to hold it. That's what Rava says. So now in this braisa, we're saying that what is the minimum shear for the niyar machuk l'shtar parua? If in the loven, in the margin, there's enough kidei lechtov shtei otiot. So he says, so b'shleim l'Rav Sheshet d'amar my shtiotiot shel kesher mosin shapir. So according to Rav Sheshet, two otiot means like the larger Greek letters. Fine, we're good with that. El l'Rav d'amar shtiotiot didan ubeit achiza d'hainu kesher mosin. So but according to Rav, shtiotiot means two of the Hebrew letters, and you need a place to hold it, which is kesher mosin. Here I don't need a beit achiza because in other words, let's say I have niyar machuk. I have a piece of paper, 90% blotted out, and then 10% not, or 5% not blotted out. So in the 5%, I have enough to write two letters. Would it make sense that the braisa would say that I need in the margin a space to hold it? It doesn't make sense because I can hold it in the blotted out area. You know what I mean? So the Gemara is saying Rabbi's pshat doesn't seem to make so much sense. So the Gemara says kasha. The Gemara says that's a kasha against Rava. And when the Gemara uses the term kasha, it means it's a question, but there is an answer that you could usually find for it. All right, I'm going to stop now for a minute. Do you have any questions, comments, or thoughts? Everybody good? All right, let's keep moving. All right, let's say now, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in the Braisa, Hamotzi Kesher Mosin, Achlo Hero Lomoches Chayav. Before he in other words, he has this receipt, this tax collector's receipt. Before he shows it to the tax collector, then he's chayav for hotzah. In other words, it has value to him. In other words, somebody's going to check if he paid the taxes. So before he shows it to this like toll collector that he paid it, so then he's chayav for hotzah. Mishirah lamoches. But once he showed it to the tax collector, he's patur because it has like no use. It's like, let's say you park, you know, like let's say you park in Great Neck Plaza, you get like one of those parking things, you know, you can park for 1 hour. So then once I go back to the car and the time has passed, that sheet has no value. So that's what he's saying. So if I'm taking out something that has no value to anybody, I'm not chayav for hotzah on Shabbos. Since Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Abishur Lamoches Chayav, Rabbi Yehuda says, even though he's shown it already to the tax collector, he's still chayav for hotzah, then he should tzarech lo, because he needs it. So the Gemara says, my benayu, usually mean what's the nafkamina. Here, it's interesting. Rashi explains my beinayhu. If you look in the Rashi, Ruth, it's around five lines above where we are, my beinayhu. He says, kolomar, but my plea, what's the point of dispute? L'may ka'amar, Rabbi Yehuda tsariklo. Like, why does Rabbi Yehuda say that he'll need it? What is he talking about? So back in the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Ika beinayhu, Rehite mochsa. So Abaye says that the point of dispute is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, I have to worry about Rehite mochsa, the runners from the tax collecting department. In other words, like I passed the checkpoint. In other words, let's say it's like you're traveling on the turnpike. I'm traveling on the river. So I don't know, maybe I'm going down the river, or I go over one bridge, then I'm going to go somewhere else. So the first place I pay the tax. Then at point two, they're checking me to see if I paid the tax. Now, once I paid, show them that I paid the tax, so the Tanakh says I don't need it. But Rabbi Yehuda says, according to Abaye, you have to still be worried about Rehite Mosa, that the tax collectors' runners, sometimes they would run after somebody after he's, you know, past point B to say, oh, did you really pay the tax? Let me see. And then they would check up on him again. Rav Amar, Moches Gadol, Moches Katan, Ikebeinayu. Rav says, where you have like a chief tax collector and a sort of like an inferior tax collector. So he says that even though I've shown it to like the number one honcho, so but the number two may ask me for it. Ravashi Amar, Chad Moches Ika Binayu. He says that there's just one tax collector, but there could be a tax collector in an unrelated place, like downriver. He says, "Meish sarich lo laharot lamoche sheni da amali chazi gaber demoche sana." In other words, he wants to show the tax, second tax collector, he's a man who pays his taxes. I'm an honest user of bridges or the river. I pay my taxes. See, here's a tax receipt from the earlier guy. So anyway, the point is that according to the Tana Rabbi Yehuda, there could be situations where you need it even after you've paid the tax and shown it to the authorities, and therefore you're chayav for hutzah. Okay, you look puzzled, Yosef. Anybody have any questions?
I missed the last answer. What was the last answer?
Yeah, in other words, he's got like one, there's one tax department here at one point in the river. Now there's another tax department later on downriver. Okay. But he wants to show the second tax collector guy, you know, I'm an honest guy. I pay my taxes. See, look, I pay this tax. So, you know, see, I have a whole record here. You don't have to worry about me. I pay the taxes that I owe. So that's the thing. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts?
There's a very interesting commentary or background note in this Gemara about tax collectors. It'll take me like 1 minute to read it.
Fine. Let's hear.
In ancient times, a significant portion of state revenue came from tariffs that were typically levied at borders, crossings, bridges, and major thoroughfares. For many years, central authorities leased the right to collect taxes to individuals. These tax collectors often raised taxes beyond the actual official rate of taxation or levied taxes on items that were exempt from taxes to increase their own revenues. There were even self-appointed tax collectors whose authority ranged from semi-official to non-existent. Due to the irregularities regarding collecting taxes, some people made private arrangements with the tax collectors. This may be where this comes from, this Gemara you just went through. Through fixed payments or due to good personal relationships, they received exemptions from taxes. The tax receipt was a kind of certificate stating that the tax collector had exempted a merchant or traveler from paying the tax. Since these exemptions were distributed on a personal basis, they were occasionally used to demonstrate to a different tax collector that the bearer was trusted by the tax authorities in the hope that he would not have to pay a tax again.
Okay, very nice, Robert. Thank you.
Interesting historical note.
It is. So you were exempt from a tax on your tax.
Well, I think the point was that if you had a private deal, okay, and you and the guy sort of just looked sideways, and then you went and then you ran into a real tax collector, you at least had some document to show that allegedly you paid the tax already.
All right, let's see further. All right, now I'm going further in the Gemara. Okay, we're around 10 lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanan, everybody have it? Ayin Chenu Bay 78b. So Tana Rabbanan, Hamotzi Shtar Chov, if a person is carrying out an IOU note, a promissory note, Ad Shlo Pro'o Chayav, if it has not yet been paid, it was not yet collected, he's chayav for hutzah. In other words, he's carrying out a document that has a lot of value. So he's chayav for hutzah on Shabbat. He says, mishipra'o patur. But once the debt has already, the underlying debt has been paid, he's patur because that document has no value. That's what the Gemara is saying.
The lender's
what,
carrying...
Wait, let's wait. Don't jump the gun, Yosef. Don't jump the gun. Rabbi Yosef Omer, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, I said Rabbi Yosef because I think of you, Yosef. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afish pro chayav, even after it's been paid, he still chayav pro tzah, nish tzarichlo, because he still needs the document. Okay, Yosef, I'm going to give some answers. What's the problem?
Who's carrying it? Lender or the borrower?
It would be the lender is carrying it.
Lender, okay.
Okay, all right, now, the Gemara says, Mai Beinayu. Now, again, here Rashi usually doesn't translate Mai Beinayu. Here he does it again. If you look in Rashi, two lines above where it gets very wide, Mai Beinayu, you have it, Ruth? He says, Mai Beinayu, Ruth, do you have it? Okay. He says, Kolomar, Mai Plutai, what's the machloket? Umatam, notnum ledeim. What reason do they give for each one? So it's an atypical use of the word Mai Beinayu. Mai Beinayu is usually what's the nafkamina. Here the Gemara is saying, like it's as if saying Mai Tamayhu, what's their svara? So it's back in the Gemara. So Mai Beinayu. So Amar of Yosef, Asur l'shod shtar perua ika Beinayu. So there's a machloket in the Gemara whether whether a lender is allowed to keep around his house an IOU note which has already been paid. He says, Rabbanan Savri Asur l'shod shtar perua. Come you hold that a person is enjoined not to keep in his possession a promissory note which the debt has been paid. And Rashi quotes, if you look in the first wide line in Rashi, he quotes a pasuk in Iyov from the book of Job, Al tshkom bo alecha avla, let not like iniquity reside in your house. And so therefore, the lender, you know, is not going to keep that document. He's going to throw it in the garbage. Let's see back in the Gemara. So Amar Rav Yosef, Rabbanan Savri Asur l'shod shtar perua. Come and hold, you can't keep a paid up document in your house. Rav Yehuda Savar Mutar l'shod shtar perua. He says, I could keep a shtar perua around in the house. So if that's the case, it does have some value. And what would I use it? I would use it maybe to cover my bottle or something like that with. So if you look in the second wide line of Rashi, Mutar Hilkach Yotzio Malve Chab Circle the Kro Chapitz Lochid. Okay, that's the first answer in the Gemara. Now, in terms of, we'll see, we've had this before. This is really touching on sugyas in I think Bava Metzia, right? In other words, remember about there's a lot of different dinim. Usually, typically, when a person has Bisman Chazal, if a person had a debt, so he would produce the lender would produce the document, and then the lender would pay, and then the shtar would be given to the borrower. The shtar would be given to the borrower, who would then normally destroy the document. That would be the way it would normally go. Here, the Gemara is anticipating a case where the debt has been paid, and yet the document is still in the hands of the lender. It could be connected to a machlok that the Gemara is going to bring up, whether we write a shovar, whether we write a receipt for a person. So it could be that the lender came, he said, you owe me $10,000, and the borrower says, yeah, I do owe you $10,000, and here's the $10,000, where's my note? He says, I don't have it, but write me a receipt. He writes a receipt, and then maybe he finds the document, you know, a month later. So, and then he carries out the document on Shabbos. So is he chayav for that or not? So according to the one opinion, he's supposed to destroy that document, you know, burn it or whatever. So he's not chayav for hutzah because that document has no legally, you know, halakhic value to him. But according to the opinion that he's allowed to keep the document around, he, the lender, could keep it around. It does have value because he could use it to as a bottle stopper, a bottle cover, you know, for his plytone. Okay, that's the first answer. Everybody good? Yosef, you good with that answer? Okay, good. Okay, good.
Would a valid promissory note that hasn't been paid be considered muksa on Shabbos?
Yes, it would.
So if it had been paid, then would it be muksa?
I'm not sure, but we're not addressing issues of muksa.
In other words, if it was just something like you said, he could just wrap it around a bottle or something.
Yeah, I think it would be on what his designation he had made for it before Shabbos. So if before Shabbos he designates it as his bottle stopper, then it's not muksa. Otherwise, I think it would be a muksa item. Okay, all right. Let's see back in the Gemara now. The Okay, now, okay, we're three lines above where it gets wide. So Abai Amar, the Kuli Ama, Sudashot Shtar Parua. Abai says no. He disagrees with the, who was the first pshat? Yeah. So Abai disagrees with Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef was his Rebbe. Apparently Abai has a different pshat from his Rebbe. He says everybody agrees in the Braisa that you're not allowed to keep a Shtar Parua, a paid up document in your possession. Here the issue is if the borrower admits, in other words, let's just take this outside. If the lender comes to court and he has the document and he's got to verify the document and prove its bona fides, he has to have the signatures verified before he can collect on the debt. Let's say the borrower says, I concede, you know, I stipulate that those are the correct signatures. That was the document, but I already paid it up. I paid it up already. So it's that you're holding a valid document, but I paid up the debt. So the issue is then, do we say, like, you know, it's like hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir. It's like since you relied on the lova to verify, and the malva is not able to verify the signatures elsewhere. That's his only proof to the bona fides of the document, which is the borrower. So now the question is a machloket in the Gemara. Do I say, well, the lova, the borrower wins, you know, hands down, because he says it's a valid document, but he said he paid it up. So then that's it. He's the one who said it was a valid document. He said, and according to another opinion, no, he's verifying the document, but we can still collect on that document. So let's see back in the Gemara. So it's, again, so I'll begin three lines above where it gets wide. Abai Amar, the Kuli Amar, Sur Lashot Shtar Parua. Everybody agrees you can't keep a paid-up document in the house. That's off the table. V'hacha b'mona shtar shektavo, Surich L'chaimo Kemiflagi. Here, the point is, if the Lova admits that he wrote it, in other words, he admits that there was an underlying debt there, but he says it was paid up, does the lender now have to verify the signatures? Tanakama Savar, Mona Shtar Shtavo, Surich L'chaimo. The Tanakama holds that the lender is up a creek. In other words, he's got to verify it. He can't verify it. So that being the case, so Mishapra'o Patur, so Mishapra'o doesn't mean that he paid it up. It means that the lender says he paid it up. So then he's Patur for Otsa, because the document is valueless to him. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Mota Shash Tavo, Ain't Sarich L'Kaimo. Rabbi Yehuda holds no. If the borrower is honest enough to admit that was a valid document, so now the burden of proof would shift over to the borrower to prove that he paid it up and that it is a valid document. So just one line, umayachlo pro misha pro. What are the words, misha achlo pro misha pro? Top line on ayin tet amud aleph, achu mar lova parati velo parati. It means, depending on whether the lova says I paid it back or I didn't pay it back. So again, the Mishnah is saying, so let's go back to the Braisa. We'll touch it into the Braisa. So this is eight lines above where it gets wide on Ayin Ched Amud Beis 78b. It's talking about Hamotzi Shtarkov Ad Shlo Pra'o Chayav. In other words, if the lender admits that he wrote the document and he did not pay the debt, then the malva is liable for hotza. In other words, he's taking out a valid document on Shabbos. He's chayav for it. Misha pro'o, but if the lender says, yeah, it's a valid document, but I paid up that document, patur, then he's patur, because it's like toilet paper. It's got no value. I mean, toilet paper's got more value. It has no value to him. He says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af misha pro'o chayav, misha sariklo. The Tana Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the lender says, yeah, I paid it up, but the lender, even if the borrower says I paid it up, but the lender can still collect on it, so he's chayev. Okay, now, okay, everybody good with that? Yosef, you're good with that?
No, I'm not good with the second answer.
Why not?
What's wrong? I didn't get the difference.
All right. Okay, the base. Okay, Yosef, you listening? Okay. So the basic difference, I'm hearing my echo there. Okay, the basic difference is, If the lender is carrying out a document that he can use to collect the debt, he's chayav for hotza. If he's carrying out a document that he cannot use to collect the debt, he's not chayav for hotza.
It's not chashuv.
Right. So here the case is the lender has the document, and it says that the borrower owes him $10,000, and he has signatures on it, but the lender is not able to verify the bona fides of that document from any other source other than the borrower.
Okay.
So if the borrower says, yeah, that is a valid document, I owe you the $10,000, then the lender is chayav hotzah. But if the lender says no, I don't. It's a valid document. It was a valid document, but
I paid
the debt.
The borrower.
Yeah, the borrower. He says then he's not chayav hotzah because it's garbage, not toilet paper, but garbage. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if the borrower says I paid the debt, the lender can still collect on the document.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Okay, what's up, Robert?
If the lender demonstrates that the document is valid,
right,
even if the borrower acknowledges I signed it, and then that's a valid document. If the borrower says I paid it, but he can't demonstrate it, what's the status of the debt?
Wait, I'm not getting the case so clearly.
All right. The lender comes in with the promissory note.
Okay, so
I loaned Rabbi Goldstein.
Right, I got it. Okay, fine. And then what happens?
The borrower says, that's my signature, and you did loan me $100, but I paid it.
Right, that's the case we're talking about.
No, but wait a minute. I have a different question. If the borrower can't prove that he paid it, what's the status of the debt?
No, that's also the case we're discussing. In other words, that's exactly the case we're discussing.
Right, but the what's lender, the answer? I'm not following the answer. In other words, if I just walk in and say I paid the money, but I can't prove it, that means I paid the money?
In other words, in this case, the lender, there are ways. This is really a sugya in Bava Metzia.
He wants to see how the litigation.
The first yisod is that the unlike American law, the borrower does not sign the document. The document is signed by two witnesses who say that we saw Reuven lend Shimon this money on this and this date. That's the way the document reads. Okay?
Got it.
Now, typically the way it should work is that Reuven, the lender, comes to court with the document, and then Shimon, the borrower, comes to court with the money, and then if Shimon says, I paid the debt, so Reuven says, well, how come I have the shtar if you paid the debt? So Shimon should pay the money, Shimon, the borrower, pays the money, then Reuven, the lender, gives Shimon the document. That should be the way it should work. Now, there's a burden of proof on Reuven, the lender, to verify the signatures. Now, there's a way that he could do this. It's a little bit like you have, like with wills, you have a self-attesting affidavit and things like that. So when the will is submitted to probate, it goes chick-chock. You have the witnesses, and then they sign, and then this date, blah, 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 and then you give it into probate. So there's a way for the lender to have it verified from the get-go, to have a Beis Din say, we certify that these signatures took place, and we the Beis Din. But he didn't do that either. So he just has this document with the signatures of the witnesses. So then the $64,000 question is, if the borrower admits that it is a valid document, the borrower admits that was the document, and I did borrow the money on that and that date, and those are valid signatures on the document, but he says, but I paid the loan. I paid the loan. So then where is the burden of proof? That's basically what we're talking about. So according to one opinion, the lender wins the case because according to one opinion, the borrower wins the case. In other words, the lender's whole case turns on the borrower validating the document. And the borrower also says, yeah, it's a valid document, but I paid the document. So the borrower wins. He's finished.
But wait a minute.
Just one minute.
How can the borrower win if he can't prove he paid the money?
Because the whole existence of the debt turns on his statement, not the document. In other words, because the whole validity of the document turns on the borrower's statement. And the borrower says, yeah, it was a kosher document, but I paid the debt. So that being the case, he wins the case. But according to another opinion, he does not win the case, and now the burden of proof is still on the borrower to prove that he repaid the debt. Okay, I got to move on. This is really, it's really a sugya in Bava Metzia. Stay with Daf Yomi for another 2.5 years, and then you'll get to Bava Metzia. Okay, okay. So let's see back in the Gemara now. All right, last shot. Okay, everybody still here? All right. So now, okay, we're up to Rava. The top line on Ayin Ted Amud Aleph, 79A, the top line. Rava Amar, and again, we had a buy-in, now we got Rava. It says, Dekuli Amma Moda B'Shtar Shtekavosh Tzirich Kaimo. Everybody agrees that if the lender admitted that he wrote the shtar, that it means that it was a valid document, if the borrower rather admits it, that the lender has to validate it. He says, "V'hacha b'kotvin shovar k'miflagi." Here, the point of dispute is whether we write a receipt for a paid-up loan. In other words, if let's say there are two honest people, the lender and the borrower, and they both walk to court, and the lender says, "I didn't pay the debt, and I'm really willing to pay the debt," but the borrower says, "I can't locate the IOU note. I can't locate the IOU note." So according to one opinion of the Gemara, we would write a shovar. We would write a receipt for the borrower, but then that would put the burden of proof on the borrower to keep the receipt. In other words, he's got to keep the receipt. And according to another opinion of the Gemara, we don't write receipts. The shtar itself has to be the item that's produced. So he says, "B'kotfin shtar k'miflagi, Tanakama savar kotfin shtar." So the Tanakama holds, let me take a look, that we write a shtar. One second. Yeah, right. He says, so once the loan is paid, he says, the lender has no need for the document. He's not liable for taking it out. In other words, it means like this.
Because it has no value because the other guy is holding the receipt.
Yeah, but it's a little trickier with this. In other words, like this. The lender pays off the debt, and the borrower pays off the debt, and the lender says, I'll produce the document for you. So and let's say he pays it off with witnesses, everything else, he could prove his case that he paid it off. He says, I'll produce the document. I'll produce the IOU note. So so if he can't produce the document, according to one opinion, he could, in the alternative, write a receipt for him. He could write a receipt. So let's see. So the Gemara says, Tanakama Savar Kofin Shovar. So Tanakama holds that once the debt has been paid off, the shtar really has no value, because even if he doesn't produce the shtar, he can write a receipt. And he doesn't need the shtar to get the money. He already got the money. So it's really of limited value. For Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Rabbi Yehuda holds, no. Even if the debt has been paid off on the way that I described it, ain kofin shovar, we don't write a receipt. So therefore, if he doesn't come up with that document, the lova is going to sue him to give him back the money because I shouldn't have given you the money without that document. So that's the way that'll go. All right, anybody question on that one? Are we good? All right, now, last opinion. Ravashi Amar, Mimnesh Tsarich La Rotola Balchov Shani, the Amrlay Chazi Gabra de Paraana. So Ravashi says the document has value. According to Ravashi, it's talking of not that the lender has the document, but the borrower is walking around with the document. Is the borrower Chayef for Hotza'a? So according to Ravashi, I'm reading from, he says, the Tanakama holds no use for such document. He's therefore not allowed of taking it out. He says, in other words, when it's not paid, we're talking about that the lender's carrying it out. But once it's paid, in other words, the Bryce is talking about two different cases. One case where the lender walks out with the document, where it's an unpaid document, he's chayav for hotza'a. But when it's paid, we're talking that the borrower's walking around with it. The borrower's walking around with a paid document. So is he chayav for hotza'a? So according to one opinion, no, it's like worthless. He should just destroy it. It's no value to him. According to the other opinion, no, it does have value because he could produce that document at a later point in time to another lender to show that he's a reliable borrower. In other words, this possession of that document would prove, let's say I have a whole collection of these documents. See, I borrow money from Reuven, from Shimon, from Levi, from Yehuda, from Issachar, and I have all the IOU notes because I paid back all the debts. So I'm a reliable borrower, and you could lend me $3 million. So according to that pshat, that would be why he's chayav for hotzah. All right, any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did? All right, let me unmute everybody. Let me turn the recording off 1 second. Let's do this.